Into the Fold is a podcast on mental health issues produced by the Haug Foundation for Mental Health. The Haug Foundation is part of the Division of Diversity and Community Engagement at the University of Texas at Austin. The podcast is entirely funded by the Haug Foundation and produced by Haug Foundation staff. The views you are about to hear do not reflect those of the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, a podcast on mental health issues. I'm your host, Ike Evans, and today we're delighted to bring you episode 105, Forensic Mental Health, A Lawman's Perspective.
We're not getting any reimbursement for this services. However, we're the first one that people call, and we're the only ones that can't say no. So we have to deal with it. We can't run with it. So if you're in law enforcement, you have to step up to the plate every time the phone rings and provide that some type of service. And we would prefer that it would be in the hands of the mental health professionals instead of law enforcement.
The mental health issue has always been in Texas, especially in the criminal justice system. I think the legislature and a lot of high level decision makers are just now catching up to what I found out over 20 years ago.
If there's any one thing people should understand about the mental health system in the United States, it's just how fragmented it truly is. People can enter the system through a variety of gateways, and once there, go down any number of paths, only some of which may lead to long-term recovery and wellness. Perhaps most relevant to this episode is the fact that bottlenecks in one part of the system can lead to breakdowns in another. There's currently a strong push in Texas toward diverting people with mental health conditions away from the criminal justice system, where too many of them end up, and into treatment. This is the good news. The bad news is that the demand for flexible, evidence-based, person-centered mental health treatment far outpaces the supply. One area of the system where this misalignment between need and access is most acutely felt is the so-called forensic system. Forensic mental health refers to services that are given to an individual on the orders of a judge or court as part of a legal proceeding. In fact, a full 70% of state hospital beds are forensic cases. 1,200 Texans are currently awaiting admission to state hospitals for competency restoration, and people are losing access to badly needed care because of the logjam. Solving a problem this complex requires a multi-agency, multi-sector effort that will involve close coordination, sharing of data, and adept policy. Our guest, Limestone County Sheriff Dennis Wilson, is here to share his thoughts on where this system needs to go. But first, I thought it would make sense to also hear from someone with lived experience of this system.
So my name is Kevin Garrett. I am the Peer Policy Fellow of the Texas Jail Project, as you just mentioned. Actually, my journey began on this about 16 years ago, when I was an inmate in the Tarrant County Jail, and I was facing a couple of low-level charges that was a part of my substance abuse, and I didn't know it at the time, but my undiagnosed mental health. During that particular time in the Tarrant County Jail, I got a diagnosis. It was pretty much just like the typical screening that they do in jails nowadays, but I got a diagnosis, and the person that interviewed me stated to me that she believed that I was clinically depressed. And that was the first time I'd ever had any kind of professional diagnosis or any interaction or anything whatsoever about my mental health. And so, you know, immediately I thought to myself, I was relieved because I had known for years that something was not quite right, that I didn't exactly fit in easily in social situations and stuff like that. But the unfortunate thing for me at that particular time was that this person that interviewed me, and I can't remember if she was an actual psychiatrist or what, but But I asked her, what were they going to do about it? You know, what in terms of a prescription or what? And she just stated flat out, we can't prescribe you anything. We can't give you anything for it, you know. And so that was very discouraging after just, you know, moments earlier, just finding out for the first time in my life that there was something wrong with my mental health.
That was Kevin Garrett, peer policy fellow with the Texas Jail Project in Austin. Garrett was formerly incarcerated in both county jails and in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice prison system. We'll be joining Kevin again later in the episode, but now let us turn to Limestone County Sheriff Dennis Wilson.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and it is an honor to be here today. I appreciate the opportunity to speak about something I dearly love, and that is mental health.
For our listeners who are just totally new to this topic, what do we mean when we say forensic services or forensic mental health services?
Well, in Texas, when we talk about forensic services or the forensic mental health services, that's normally the clientele that we deal with in the criminal justice system. And that's a process that concerns the operations of county jails. And that's where people that have issues, mental health issues, that are in the criminal justice system wind up in our county jails. And this begins the forensic journey for them.
So in what ways has this issue touched you? And how did you become so passionate about it?
Well, I've been serving in law enforcement for approximately 45 years. I've been a sheriff for 20 years. And not soon after I became an elected sheriff, I took up the responsibility of operating a county jail where I had a more close contact with those that suffer from mental health illness. I began to witness, in my opinion, the mistreatment of these people simply because we were not providing them with what I felt like was adequate mental health services. It seemed to me that the people that came into the criminal justice system that suffered from mental health illness were more or less put in the back of the buildings and forgotten about and take a long time to get them through the criminal justice system. And I just felt like that was wrong. And these people seemed to never have a voice and no one would ever stand up and speak for them. And I felt like that was a very important part of my job, was to make sure that they weren't forgotten and they were not left in the criminal justice system. But more importantly, they're human beings. They were made by the same God that made me and you. And why were we neglecting them but not providing them with adequate mental health services? And that's a battle that I continue to fight and will always fight, because we can do better than what we're doing now. And I think we're making progress, but we still have a long ways to go. But at the end of the day, I want to always remember the fact that that is a human being that has a mental health illness that can be treated and properly diagnosed when they're put in the right environment. And I don't think that the county jail should be utilized as a state hospital for treatment. And that's what we're doing nowadays.
So I last did an episode on this topic back in 2016. The consensus of the two experts that I interviewed was that our state's approach to forensic services was badly in need of reform. How much has changed since then?
Well, being able to be a part of the work group that's been asked to address these issues, I think we're beginning to see the baby steps taken that need to be taken to improve our system. You have four groups that I am associated with: the Joint Committee on Access for Forensic Sciences, our ASH Redesign Brain Health Care Work Group that we work out of Dell Medical there in Austin. You have the Texas Judicial Commission on Mental Health that's come on board, and you have the Texas Council of Community Centers. These four groups seem to share a common knowledge, and they also are working very hard to solve the issues that we face and redesign and rework the current mental health system that we're operating on in Texas. And again, it was very encouraging to see the Texas Judicial Commission on Mental Health form and take interest, because that's the courts, that's the criminal courts in Texas. And we've seen great progress all across the state with the involvement of this group And it matches up perfectly with the work of the other three groups that we're doing. And that is, again, to improve the services. So I think we are making headway. It's going to be a slow process, but it's one that I'm very proud to be a part of.
One problem that was underlined on that previous episode was the lack of coordination between different parts of the system. You know, the courts, the state hospitals, the jails. So what are you doing to try to remedy that?
Well, the identification of those issues have been critical because they're all true. And what we're seeing through the work of our committees is we're trying very hard to, again, improve our communications between the different work groups. There's a lot of misunderstanding about the system and how it works. At one time, it was all about the beds and providing a sufficient number of beds. Texas only has less than 3,000 beds in the whole hospital system. That's nowhere near the capacity that we need. But we also recognize from our different studies that it's no longer all about just the beds. It's about providing aftercare. We look at a number of issues that we deal with when we talk to about someone that has mental health and mental health issues. There are five things that everyone must recognize, that to keep them from being reoffenders and to keep them stabilized and committed to our world, they have to have housing, they have to have transportation, they have to have employment, they have to have medication, but most importantly, they have to have peer support. And peer support is something that we're building on that it has to be in place, whether it's from a CIT team, whether it's from a social worker, from the court system. Everybody has to pull together and work as a team to be successful. Otherwise, we'll keep seeing the same people over and over and over again in the mental health crisis. And that's what we're trying to expand on and improve the system.
It's always seemed to me that, you know, the part of the reason why beds tends to, you know, be what people focus on is that beds are very easy to visualize. But some of the things that you're talking about are more, you know, system level. And those things are not as easy to visualize, but they're just as important, I would think.
That's true. And, you know, we also have to play an important role for us, those of us that work on these committees, is the education of our legislative bodies, both in the House and the Senate, because that's where the money that comes from the programs that we need or we feel like will work to be successful in the treatment of people with mental health issues. So education is always going to be an important role that we have to provide so that we can make the necessary changes that we need to make. Being in law enforcement, and particularly those of us that run county jails, sometimes it's difficult to understand why we have to keep a person that a court has ordered to restore storage for months upon months upon months before we can get them into a facility. In the meantime, that's a safety risk for us. We have issues with that population, protecting them and protecting our staff from them. And so again, a county jail is not the proper setting when you're trying to talk about treating someone with an illness, and that's where they should be, in a hospital environment. So that's a hard sell for those of us in law enforcement to accept when we're saying we're not getting any reimbursement for this services. However, we're the first one that people call, and we're the only ones that can't say no. So we have to deal with it. We can't run with it. So if you're in law enforcement, you have to step up to the plate every time the phone rings and provide that some type of service. And we would prefer that it would be in the hands of the mental health professionals instead of law enforcement.
You probably already asked, you know, officers to do, you know, everything that's already in their power to do. And so, you know, there comes a point at which, you know, it becomes more a matter of policy and asking that, you know, that people think about this issue in broader terms, right?
You're very much correct, because anytime you see an incident, if you watch TV and you have an incident come up, probably 9 times out of 10, they're going to make a reference to this individual was in some kind of mental health crisis. But yet we go back and we hear the continued training issues that law enforcement officers must go through, what must go on in our county jail as far as our correctional staffs, the mental health training that they're being required to take. And again, there's no bigger, stronger supporter for education than I am. But I'm telling you that you can't continue to blame law enforcement or correctional officers for the mental health woes of our state and nation, because we're not trained in that per se to be that type of professional, although that's laid in our lap and we have to deal with it. And so when something bad goes wrong, obviously we always are the ones that are getting blamed for the failures of the system, when it's not us, it's the system. But more importantly, we have to accept that responsibility because, again, we run county jails, and our duty is to protect those that are in our custody.
So have you had any, like, just personal experiences that really kind of brought home for you that mental health is real, and that it was really worth your paying closer attention to? Was there a moment that acted as a wake-up call for you?
The wake-up call for me is because for a number of years, I've had a positive relationship with a number of mental health professionals that worked in our area or the area that I live in. But most importantly, the driving home factor for me was I had a family member that had a mental health crisis. And I realized the signs that this individual was going through and chose to ignore or take the appropriate action that I should have taken before the situation got really bad. And it was a different feeling once you were on the other side of the fence as a user of mental health services than being compared to a provider of mental health services. I was fortunate that I had a good friend that was a psychiatrist, a friend of mine, a doctor, and he took me by the hand and he kind of led me through this episode with my family member. And he exposed me to an area of mental health treatment and mental health plan that was successful for my family member. But again, I was fortunate to be in that position to be told and shown how a mental health plan works and why a person has the illness that they have and it can be treated. And that's the important part. People can be treated and people can have their lives changed and a difference made in their lives when they have the appropriate tools in place. And that's contact with your mental health workers, medication. But again, it always goes back, in my opinion, to peer support. And our family was drawn together to offer this family member a tremendous amount of support for all of us because it was a very traumatic time in our life. But when you deal with it on a user basis, you understand real quick, where are the resources and what's available to us? And so many people in our state today walk around and don't know where those services are or how do we expose those people to get the right services. And that's why I fight every day to help people and try to get them to where they need to go or at least get them hooked up with the right places so they can be offered the services that are out there currently in the mental health field.
I appreciate you sharing that. Thanks. So we hear a lot about competency restoration as being kind of a key piece of the puzzle. My question is, can you tell us more about what that process involves and how it relates to the problems that we're talking about, why we need to do it better?
Well, competency restoration is a big time topic that's been talked about for at least the last couple of years here in Texas, even before that. But you see a much greater demand for that service, particularly because of the population and the Texas population and the explosion of the Texas population and the number of people coming into the criminal justice system. And you have more and more lawyers, defense lawyers that obviously are filing the appropriate paperwork with the courts to have their clients evaluated. And obviously that's something that I would want to do if I was a lawyer, to make sure that my client understood what was going on in the criminal justice system before we move forward. The competency restoration, again, is a program that is being talked about and hopefully soon we'll be implementing it all across the state. I think we have been involved at the state level with a number of other areas nationwide, We've been in communication and participated with other states and studies and see what are best practices. I think that's very important, because if we're going to get money from the legislature to fund these parts of our mental health situations, that we need to do what we know are proven, and that we need to do the things that work. And that's where our money should go, where our best practices, that's where our money needs to be spent. And the Compton Restoration Program, I think, is critical. I believe in the state of Florida, you'll see the movement there is where these people are identified going into the criminal justice system. They are provided with the appropriate programs to bring them or restore their competency to be able to participate in the court proceedings. And I think in Texas that we should adopt that, because I believe now we are simply putting these people backwards. We're putting them in the criminal justice system and trying to get them through the criminal justice system, and then we try to identify what their mental health needs are. And I think that's backwards. I think we need to be identifying what their mental health needs are, restore their mental health, and then get them in the criminal justice system so they understand where we're going with them. And then, most critical, is prepare that aftercare. That's very critical. They have to have a referral of aftercare services, where those services are, and then have people in place to make sure that the services are completed by the person that's affected with mental health issues.
So what do you think are the three most key things in solving this problem, you know, for either your own department or for the state in general?
Well, I'll speak to you first as on behalf of the sheriffs of Texas. One of the problems that we have in our county jails, again, is the mental health population that we're required to hold and hold them for a long period of time. And we have got to resolve or come up with a solution to move these people into treatment more quickly than what we have in the past. I think that's a state issue. I know that's a state issue. It's very costly for us to have that population to continue to be housed in our county jails. And so I think that's something that needs to be looked at. I think that we need to also provide more funding so that our local mental health authorities will have options and can put programs in place at the local level, so that when these people do get to certain points in the criminal justice system, or they are discharged from the criminal justice system, there is a referral in place to track them to make sure that they stay hooked up to the programs that they're required to participate in, so that we can keep them out of the criminal justice system. And I just think I'm really impressed with the teamwork that we're currently doing here in Texas between the different groups that I named earlier. The JCAF committee over at HHSC, the ASH redesign committee, a brain health care group, the Texas Judicial Commission on Mental Health, and the Texas Council of Community Centers. There's a nucleus there of some great professional people that have some excellent ideas on how to move us forward in the whole behavior health care system in Texas. So if this group or these groups can continue to take the step they've taken in the last 2 to 3 years, with continued support from the legislatures for funding issues and just educating the general public on where we are and what we need to do to improve our services. I think that Texas will be a leader across the nation, and we will be a model for other states to follow by what we're doing here in Texas.
So the Hawk Foundation talks a lot about the need for systems level change, but you know, that looks a little bit different. Depending on where in the state that you go, what systems change looks like, you know, here in Austin doesn't look exactly the same as what it looks like, you know, in other parts of the state. And so, Sheriff David Wilson, we really appreciate you taking the time just to give us the view from Limestone County. Good luck in all of your efforts, and just keep us posted about how it's going. Thank you so much.
I will. Thank you again for the opportunity. We appreciate the Hawk Foundation and the support that they give us. And thank you again. I appreciate being here today.
Now, finally, let us return to Kevin Garrett. We're picking up his narrative after his stint in the criminal justice system. He's gotten treatment, turned his life around, found his way to law school and beyond.
Professionally, I began to realize that people who were situated in these facilities, such as myself, we were at a distinct disadvantage, and there were not very many services, and there was not a real advocate on our behalf. And so I started looking into, you know, the possibility of finding out a little bit more about mental health, about substance abuse, about the connection to criminal justice and criminal justice policies. And later on, I was able to, when I got things on track with my mental health, I got involved with a group of people, community-based people, who helped me to realize that, you know, I needed to take affirmative steps to help myself in terms of my addiction and my mental health. And so I approached it with a first thing first approach, and I tackled the substance abuse. And when I got clean, I went to undergrad, did really well in undergrad. And though I had a really colorful background, if you will, you know, I had a few felonies on my record, I decided that I was gonna give it a shot and go to law school, try, at least attempt to try, you know. And my mindset was at that time, because I had such momentum going in terms of turning my life around, and I had so much help from the community, that I figured, why not? You know, I mean, it sure it was a long shot, but I figured, why not? You know, I mean, there was a larger purpose before me, and that was trying to figure out if there is a way legally and through policy that others similarly situated as I was years before could possibly be helped. And so I was accepted into law school, and later on graduated from law school. And here I am now today, actually doing policy work.
Where did you end up going?
Actually, I had to attend a law school outside of the state of Texas, because of a Texas Board of Law Examiners rule, which basically preempted me from even studying law within the state of Texas. Because of my past. So I extended my search outside of Texas, and a private school in Oklahoma accepted me, Oklahoma City University School of Law. And I went there, and I went there with the same mindset and attitude that I had when I started this turnaround in life, and that was to just do my best.
As I mentioned in my interview with Sheriff Wilson, this is not our first attempt to tackle the very challenging issue of forensic mental health. I referred earlier to episode 23, titled Talking About Forensic Mental Health. I interviewed two experts, Neil Gowan-Smith of the University of Denver's Graduate School of Professional Psychology and Larry Fitch of the University of Maryland Medical School, for an in-depth conversation on forensic mental health, how to do it better, and ways that the judicial and mental health systems can interface in a more cost-effective and humane way. So here is a snippet from that episode.
If competency restoration really is focused on the kinds of services will help this person return to court and participate in their case, and it's time limited so that at some point you recognize this isn't working, then we abandon that and we move to other measures, then I think it can be really effective. And this is the challenge, I think, for systems, is to put up programs that are, you know, community-based to avoid the misuse of beds, but that are focused to avoid the risk that, you know, this whole process will be misused that way.
You can listen to the full episode 23 through the link that I have put in the description for this episode. That is it for episode 105. We hope that you enjoyed it. As ever, please subscribe. Leave us a positive review. We can be found on numerous podcast apps, including Google Play Music, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeart, and TuneIn. Thank you so much for joining us.